Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Continuing Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 5, Chapter 12, Text Number 9. Evam Niruktam Shiti Shabda Vrittam.
Evam Niruktam Shiti Shabda
Vrittam. Asan nidhanat paramano paramanavo ye avidyaya manasa kalpitaste yesham sammohena krito visheshah evam niruktam kshiti shabda vritam Asan nidhanat paramanu voye avidyaya manasa kalpitaste yesham samuhena krito visheshah evam thus niruktam falsely described Shiti Shabda of the word earth. Vrittam, the existence. Asat, not real. Nidhana, from the dissolution. Parama Anavaha, atomic particles. Yay, all of which. Avidyaya, because of less intelligence. Manasa, in the mind. Kalpitaha, imagined. Te, they. Yesham, of which. Samuhena, by the aggregate. Kritaha, made. Visheshaha, the particulars. Translation, one may say that varieties arise from the planet Earth itself, however. Although the universe may temporarily appear to be truth, it ultimately has no real existence. The Earth was originally created by a combination of atomic particles, but these particles are impermanent. Actually, the atom is not the cause of the universe, although some philosophers think so. It's not a fact that the varieties found in the material world simply result from atomic juxtaposition or combination. Purport. Those who follow the atomic theory think that the protons and electrons of atoms combine in such a way as to bring all material existence into being. However, the scientists failed to discover the cause of the atomic existence itself. Under these circumstances, we cannot accept that the atom is the cause of the universe. Such theories are advanced by unintelligent people. According to real intelligence, the real cause of the cosmic manifestation is the Supreme Lord, Janmad Yasya Yataha. He is the original cause of all creation. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 10.8, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate. Krishna is the original cause, Sarvakarana Karnam. He is the cause of all causes. Krishna is the cause of atoms, comma, the material energy. Bhumi Arpo Nalo Vayu Kamano Bhutire Bacha Ahankar Ityam Me Bina Prakritir Ashtada. The ultimate cause is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and only those in ignorance try to find out other causes by posing different theories. Well, you ready for a science class this morning? several things. I think one that I might forget if I don't say it now. It's interesting, it's educational for us to see how does Prabhupada deal with a false doctrine. Very same methodology as the methodology that Sataputta deployed. You've read any of his writings. What he does is, systematically, he'll look at a theory, take it apart in its different parts and hold up this part, that part, that part, and then say, does it hold water? The falsifiability approach. And it doesn't hold water, this element, that element, the other element. He does it in many cases, he does it through math. I'll give one example. It's just to illustrate a principle. Models of Inspiration is the title of one chapter in Sataputta's book, Mechanistic and Non-Mechanistic Science. Something like that kind of a title, Mechanistic Science. So Mechanistic Science says, what is inspiration? It's just chance and random combination of neurons firing together in such a manner that, voila, you get inspiration. And the other times it's not the right combination, so you don't get inspiration. So what he does is goes into the math and says, the rate at which a synapse can transmit electrochemical charges from one neuron to the next neuron is, you know, so many per second or per minute or whatever, however he goes. And to get the consequence mathematically of, if that's how inspiration comes, then using probability theory, math, that to get the outcome of Mozart composing a symphony, as he would do. So then he takes historical examples. He would go for a walk, and in his mind, this whole symphony would appear. He'd go back to his place and he'd write down the symphony. Or in other examples, because it was his field of mathematics, his PhD was in math, long before their time, theoretical math problems were solved before there were even models of concepts for people to solve them, and they just solved them. And then 2 decades later, it proved that, you know, they had the right solution. So where did that come from? You know, so many angstrom units of brain capacity and how many neurons in the brain. If they're all firing just at once, mathematically it's not possible. So there's a hole in the theory that inspiration comes from synapses, electrochemical discharges in the neurological system. It's not mathematically plausible. There's a hole in the bucket. And then some other things and some other things, and you know, the bucket doesn't have any hole. Let's look at some other model. And it probably doesn't go through that elaborately, but he's using that methodology, the falsifiability approach, which scientists use. It doesn't prove anything. It doesn't prove something's right or something's wrong. It shows this is not so likely. It's not a plausible explanation because of some empirical data that says it's not a plausible model. You have to look at another model. It's not a, and here's a plausible model that's not falsifiable. And that's what Prabhupada is doing in the purport. Now he's invoking the authority of the Vedas that says what is the cause of the atom, but like he would say, you know, if for chemical evolution, here's the chemicals, make life. Well, you can't do that. Then why propose a theory that you can't do? It's not realistic. It's not sensible. Here's another model. Life comes from life. We have experience. Life comes from life. You say life comes from chemicals. Interesting. Here's the chemicals. It's a falsifiable approach that scientists use. They don't hold themselves to the same standard because they're shoulder to shoulder to shoulder with others, that their whole occupation, their whole career, their credibility, their esteem, their funding comes from a certain model. And then with that certain model, there's an assumption. There's no God. Or they may say it explicitly, or they may not say it explicitly, but there's an assumption. Some are quite explicit, but some are, everything can be explained in terms of matter and the laws governing matter. That's mechanistic picture. You don't need God to explain things. How? Matter and the laws governing matter. So, one of those atheistic models is the atomic theory, that modern philosophers or scientists say, and another is going way back to Kanada, and his atomic theory is called, anybody know the Sanskrit term? Paramanuvada. Paramanuvada. The Paramanu means atom. Look in the verse, in the second line. Paramana, in the word for word. Parama anava. So in Sanskrit it's Paramanu. Here's a quiz question for those of you that like Brahma Samhita. Quiz question. What's the verse? And then wait. Let me say the question. What's the verse in Brahma Samhita that this term Paramanu appears? Go ahead, Shravan. Say it slowly. Can you say the whole verse? Slowly and loudly. And a rough translation, Bhaktisiddhanta's inimitable language, says, the Supreme Lord, what's the translation in essence? Anyone know? It's text 35 if you're looking it up, unless you're answering your mail. Text 35. The Supreme Lord, the entire Jagadanda Koti, Jagadanda Koti, the entire Jagat, the unlimited universes, are Andantarasta. All the universes are within him, and in his fullness, he is present. He is present within every atom, both at the same time. That's what the verse is saying. It's contradictory. Whenever is something that's so big that all the universes are within that something that's so big, and at the same time, that something that's so big is within every atom, the Paramanu. And we also have confirmation that the super soul, is within every atom, is Supersoul alone, or is he accompanied by a living entity? the supersoul alone, just like within the heart of living entity, supersoul is there. He's within the heart of the living entity. So he's not alone, he's with the living entity. And within every particle of matter, there's living entities along with supersoul. So the living entity is smaller than the atom. Interesting. Interesting. Because this question came up during I made a whole presentation to, in response to this question. You know, the Lord is the Lord limited or unlimited? Yeah, unlimited. And his spiritual realm is limited or unlimited? Unlimited, as is he. So how can you say, how can Purusha Sukta say, how can the Rig Veda say that three quarters of everything is in the spiritual world and one quarter is in the material world? So how do you make measurements of things that are spiritual anyways? Because it's another dimension. So we had some discussion on that. One time, remind me, and we'll do that at a home program, just to get everybody stirred up. So the Atma, the Paramatma, and the three quarters, one quarter. Measure, how do you measure things up from within the spiritual realm? So, according to that one verse, text 35, simultaneously both. He's so big and he's so small at the same time. Anor and Yangsam Manusmaretiha. Ishupanishad. So, back to the text. These paramanus, the atoms, Prabhupada is acknowledging in the purport, yes, atoms make up the universe. It's in the Vedas. That's where Kannada gets away with saying everything comes from atoms. Everything, meaning the material creation, comes from atoms. And where what's the elements of the atom is protons and electrons. And they, according to, you know, if you're an atheist, if you're Kannada or any of the other modern atheists, scientists, you don't need God. You just random arrangements of things that's primordial. You say God, we say matter. And there's these protons and there's electrons, and they get together and have a party, make an atom. And then atoms get together and make, you know, things that they make. They make a universe. So there. Prove me wrong. But, so, where do the particles come from? Well, they're primordial. You say God, we say matter. So there. Stalemate. Okay. Well, you're not going to honor our scriptural authority, and we're not going to honor your puffy wuffies over here that say that's where everything comes from. So let's talk common sense. And common sense, here's some particles, make an atom. Here's some atoms, make a universe, make life. Where do we have experience that says what you're saying? So we have experience that life comes from life. We have experience. So just read it again, but it's very, you know, very simple logic. Those who follow the atomic theory think that the protons and electrons of atoms combine in such a way as to bring all material existence into being. However, the scientist fails to discover the cause of the atomic existence itself. Under these circumstances, we cannot accept the atom as the cause of the universe. Atoms make up the universe. Where do the atoms come from? And then it leads to Vedanta. Where does everything come from? What's the cause of all causes? Well, We don't know. You can advance a theory, and that's what's called mental speculation. Note, it's right in the verse. Avidyaya manasa kalpita. Manasa kalpita. It's imagined within the mind. Because of less intelligence. So the less intelligence says there's no God. Because that's what you get when you have aversion to God. You get material intelligence. And that, you know, gets together with the mind that imagines something. And then you just get a bunch of puffy buffies together that say that's what it is. And you can get some this element and that element to combine together to make some compound. And you prove to the world, look, we're smart. We know how to manipulate matter, and we're telling you, matter comes from, combination of atoms. That's all. But we're telling you. We put this compound and that, this element and that element, we got a compound, and, you know, we got all kinds of electronics and technology and sending things into Mars and, you know, we're telling you. You're going to defy our authority? Yes. You're less intelligent. You're a rascal. Prabhupada, you have to know your stuff to speak like that. But at least, for devotees, we should understand the fundamental error now of the notion, and it's not, you know, something that's remote. It's something that every kid in school has to learn. Every kid in school has to learn in the West. Education is compulsory, and the people that control education are these puffy-wuffy people. What goes in the textbooks, and they don't permit other things in the textbooks. You can call it mythology, you can call it religion, but you can't call it the way things are. Science, that's how the way things are. It's really insidious. It's not an accident. It's demoniac culture. Now, demoniac culture leads to demoniac behavior. I just yesterday was invited to speak at University of Texas in Austin on the topic of, you know, like the same topic you brought up on Sunday. The causes of gun violence and what can be done. So you go have a demonstration and get them to repeal some gun laws. But you know, the root cause is demoniac civilization. And how are you going to tell people that are bought into the demoniac civilization? That's the problem. That's a mountain to climb. And how can you not say it if you know it? How to say it so it's like, you know, it's a smoothie. I invited you to weigh in on this. I'm going to ask other people that are thoughtful persons, weigh in on it. But it's not just gun violence. It's the demoniac civilization from top to bottom. And trying to make it nice. You know, endless series of adjustments to make it not demoniac, but it's at the root of it is it's atheistic, and it leads to atheistic behavior, and then people try to manage the behavior, adjust the behavior. It's the root problem. It's why we're in the material world, aversion to God, and then even people that say they believe in God, they do demoniac behavior in the name of, you know, faith in God. God gave man dominion over animals. Have at it. Then people say, no, you can't be violent to animals. we'll leave park that one and come back. Just like the verse yesterday, although Jada Bharat was speaking to King Rahugana about the oneness of living entities, and everything gets together and then it breaks apart and goes back to the elemental state, and so all of that is interesting information and facts, but behind it all, what's behind it all? How you get to the one who's behind it all, or that which is behind it all? Then you have impersonalists, and you know it's no commitment, no surrender, no shelter, just. Texas A&M, there was a whole fantastic program they're doing there. Fantastic program. Same elements of what you're doing here, but it's a different venue. It was Good Friday, and so the school didn't announce much ahead of time, but the bus service stopped at 2 o'clock, and many of the students depend on bus service to get there. Nonetheless, there were around 80 students. And do the same things, yoga class, followed by, howdy. And then they didn't respond. Howdy! And then, howdy. And instead of Hari Bol, it's howdy, because it's Texas. You don't know because you're not from Texas. And then presentation on something, and so many questions. And then a lineup of students, and one of the students, grad student, Indian girl, very clear. How do I choose between Advaita and Bhagavad Gita? That was her question. And Advaita says, and she got it, she said it different ways three times. She understood the distinction. So it's not between Advaita and Bhagavad Gita, it's between Vaishnavism and impersonalism, or Advaita and Chinta Beta Beta Tattva. How do I choose between them? So with Advaita, there's no distinction between soul and super soul. It's just Brahman, and we just have to become Brahman oriented and become non-dual, and we're liberated. And then over there is Bhagavad Gita that says there's Paramatma, and you look up to Paramatma and you engage in activities of loving service to Paramatma. How do I choose between the two? And a lot of other really good questions from that group. So, one of the explanations is, the nature of the living entity is we want to love and be loved, and it's not an accident. It's because it's our nature. Do you want to love and be loved or not? So it's over here. And if you accept Bhagavad Gita, yes. Here's what Bhagavad Gita says, and then but then the Advaitins say that. So how do I choose? Accept the authority of Bhagavad Gita. And this is what Bhagavad Gita says. Embedded within our... So here's another point. Embedded within our Bhagavatam is everything that we need to navigate our way through the territory of modernity and different perspectives of spirituality. There's authority behind our navigating that territory, and there's some common sense behind that authority as well. Common sense doesn't prove anything, but authority isn't lacking in common sense. So we can speak common sense, we can speak authority, or both. Everything we need to navigate our territory. So the inside-out approach is, we just take shelter of Krishna through the resource of Srimad Bhagavatam and the heart purification that comes from chanting, and we can navigate our way through the whole material existence. And then we can share that with others in a compelling way because it's inside. Although it may take some time the resistance, the people that they're the scientists and the sensualists and the impersonalists and the various categories and subcategories of other people in the world that aren't Vaishnavas. And even people that call themselves spiritualists that are just not following. Well, that's another category, big category. And last point is, these six doctrines, Prabhupada said, there's nothing new. Anything that comes out that's new, it's not new. It's just a rehashing, maybe combining something from here and something from there and something from there, but it's already been stated. Just like Krishna, in his talks with Nanda Maharaj, speaks Karmakanda, one of the six doctrines. Here, Jad Bharat, after Rishabhdev, two generations later, he's speaking Kannada's Paramanuvada, or he's aware of it and diffusing it. So it's nothing new. Nothing new. One lady came after the discussion on Sunday. If someone can follow up on this, it would be good, because the kirtan was going on. She couldn't hear me. Why do bad things happen to good people was her question. She didn't say that, but why do little children get born without limbs? And why is there, it's not fair, I would not do that to anybody, why does God do that to people? It wasn't like she's here at the temple instead of, marching as an atheist. But how to help persons that don't understand why bad things happen. So you said, okay, karma, but that's too severe. Said, maybe you should be God for a day and see what it's like. Because you wouldn't do it that way. But what about all the pain and suffering and mutilation of others, just in terms of eating? Just walk up and down the street where there's eating places. And what's the violence that's being done? What's going to happen to all of that? There shouldn't be any retribution. Well, it should be milder. It's an industry. It's got to, the law of karma shouldn't be there. There should be some limits to the law of karma. Then there should be some limits to the law, the freedom, the free will of living entity. But that's not the way it is. And so there's not limits to, anyway. She's not an atheist, she's just, confused. But so, if someone could follow up with that lady, that would be nice. She's slender. Short. You know her? I don't know which one. I can't remember. Huh? Not the Spanish lady. A little petite Indian lady.
Yeah,
Jyoti. Okay. She needs some association. So how does one detect Krishna? Well, like we heard from Prahlad's prayers, like fire is in wood. You can't see the fire that's in wood. You know how to bring it out, but fire is in wood. And within all the causes and effects, Krishna is there, but he's not there. He's behind it, but he's there by his energies, and he's there by Paramatma feature, but Krishna's in Goloka. So how are you going to see Paramatma within the atom? You can't see an atom. How are you going to see Krishna's presence within everything, causes and effects of everything? Everything. Say it negatively. There isn't anything that there isn't Krishna's presence with. So why, you know, why atoms? Well, it's because of living entities having a desire to be independent enjoyers, and so he manifests. That's the verse. Bhumi rapo no lobayu kama no buddhari vacha. So those elements, and then the elements are atoms. At least earth. And then there's all this, you know, is light a wave or a particle? Whether it's a wave or a particle, it's Krishna's energy. And it exists, it rests on Krishna's energy. And Rahugana, final point. Interesting conversation in the middle of a palanquin walk, huh? Okay. Any discussion? Yes.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I was just wondering regarding the creation, the secondary creation, when Brahma does, I have not gone through the detail of that secondary creation, but you know, from him all the living entities and birds, animals, everything like comes out. So in that thing, is there anywhere that about these atoms or they are within them when they are created? So that's
they are what?
These atoms are within them when they are being created. It's kind of understood like that?
Yes, it's understood. It's an assumption. There's not a description of Adam creation.
Mm. Okay. So, thank you, Madam. I don't have a specific question, but some thoughts from what you were speaking, particularly about, you know, all this being presented in the education system, and it's very insidious.
Yes, it is. It makes one angry if you think about it.
So, you know, particularly because of my own service focus, I feel very strongly that until, as a, you know, community, we stop trusting our children to this kind of an education system and really put our money where our mouth is, there's not going to be, you know, the ISKCON that we want to create.
And or that there's very strong education in the home when children are going off to the slaughterhouse education program. They learn the distinction between the two. Either way you do it, education at home or education at school and spiritual education in the home, there is going to be exposure to atheism and the underpinnings of the atheistic model is something that devotees or children of devotee families need to learn. At some point they're going to be exposed. So it's an education. I've had discussion with educators. At what point do, this is now Gurukul teachers, at what point do the children get the, you know, the toxic exposure to how others live their lives, you know, others their age, or the society in general? How far do you go? At what point do you give that exposure? Because one of the principles, just in terms of social conduct, one of the principles is, like water, also children. Water seeks the lowest level. Children seek the lowest level. They see other children doing stuff. They want to do stuff. And the stuff leads to more stuff, leads to more stuff, leads to, you know, so where do you draw the line as a parent? And, you know, so what are you going to do? Put them in a cave and, like, Rishi Sringha's father wanted to do it. But, you know, what happened? You know, the girls came along and woo, woo, woo. Let's go. So, although it was, you know, as strict as you can get. There's one version of Ramayana, anyway, that says when the ladies got their humongous boat that was 10 miles long and 8 miles wide going up the river, there was only female Mayanesses and, you know, female monkeys. There was only females. You know, it was just like the opposite of what Rishi Sringha's father wanted. Only males. So, essential is spiritual education and training, starting in the family and then in the community, and then of course in the community there's different families that have different values, and then the children are going to need friendship and they're going to mix with other children and have families with different values, and they'll be exposed, you know, it's parenting in modern times. So the core of the convictions of the child need to be clear. Because at some point in life, they're going to encounter what other people are up to. And, you know, the values and the teachings that are supporting those values and so forth. This is like this question of, you know, the University of Texas, how to deal with situations that are out of control. You know, you put some water on it to put out the fire. But that doesn't, so. Yes, to what you said is what Prabhupada said, and at the same time, the level of competence of the teachers and the parents of the children is weak. Insufficient, so I'll say it that way. And then as a community, it's weak or insufficient, and so it's going to take a lot of commitment to the goal, but it's, you know, it's just the inside out approach as far as I'm concerned. It has to start within yourself, and then going out in a non-judgmental way to those that you interact with, those that want, and then, you know, there's concentric circles that go out. It's like leadership or parenting or, you know, anything. There has to be a, you know, a clear core amongst those who are setting the direction for others. Yad yad asharti shrestas. It has to start with that. Next. Yes.
I don't have a question, but I wanted to share with your permission a couple of things.
Mm.
So I've had two or three elongated discussions with two particle physicians, physicists. One's a professor at WashU, who's a devotee. He's a professor for particle physics.
Which kind of? What's the adjective?
Particle physics.
Particle physics, okay.
So they're the guys that have those... They have these machines that particle accelerators where they try to figure out what is
what's
composed within
the particle.
What's inside the...
Smash and break them into pieces and see what's inside.
Yeah. So this idea of matter and antimatter. And then... and then this other devotee in Chicago, Anirudh, you probably know him. He's also studying his PhD in particle physics.
Hmm.
So physics is just something I've been interested in. And just hearing from both of them about their field, have been going deeper into what the science of particle physics is. It's very interesting that two things. One is that they really don't know much. As they go deeper and deeper into particle physics, it's very clear that Krishna has kept these physics professors quite confused with the dynamics of what is within a particle. And the other is that some professors are starting to recognize that there's something beyond all of this. They don't come out and say God yet. But there was a lecture recently at WashU, the devotee Bhupal who sent me the information. They came and spoke about the fact that we can't really understand particle physics ultimately. It's a very difficult thing to get a grasp on. I was looking for that email, I couldn't find it. And if I find it, I'll probably share it with you. So that's one thing I wanted to share. The other thing I want to share is that in colleges, just this past week, I was presenting this idea of Dukkaushadam tadapi dukkam atadiyaham, where Prahlad Maharaj says that you try to solve a material problem with a material solution, you get more material problems. I gave the example of transportation. You get more cars and now there's more exhaustion gases and the ozone is going bad, more people with cancer, etc. Another example, trying to bridge communications through technology with cell phones, and now that's actually hurt communication between, let's say, people who are within the same family because everyone's on the phone. And a thoughtful PhD Chinese boy, at the end of the discussion, he said, what you brought up is very true. So the question I want to ask you is,
what solution?
What problem is worth working on? Was his question. I thought that was a fantastic question. And so, people are starting to think along these directions. So.
Sometimes we seem very pessimistic to people who really want to, you know, enjoy in the material world.
Yeah.
And, you know, we present dukkhalayam, ashashvatam, you know, it's just like, don't look for happiness here. So, especially college students feel we're just so pessimistic, you know. And, you know, I can understand, you know, they want to enjoy and we're saying, just cannot enjoy. We try to present it in, you know, bridge ways and, you know, using language, but I just get the sense that, or I don't know what to do about that.
Incrementalism. Huh? Some people what?
They don't want to come back ever because, you know.
Of course. Now, that's one way to, you know, get the cream of the crop. Those that stick around, you know, they're serious. But then there may be others that give them some space and some time and they can move. So part of that is the art of cultivation is you can go on the other side of the bridge and you can hang out and be with people on the other side of the bridge and you're just being you and they're being them and you're not, you know, they don't feel judged. And they just see, you know, you're stable, you're normal, you're happy, you're intelligent, you're warm, you have, you know, nice social skills, then, you know, so then they like you. You're not judging them for who they are. And then, you know, through that, then there can be association, they can move. Some people don't want to move. Some people, when they see something genuine, they're ready to move. So we don't have to, you know, in those circumstances, bring out, you know, the absolute truth about you're wasting your time, you're spoiling your life, etc. You're bewildering your mind and intelligence, and you're in a cesspool, my dear friend. You know, rather than saying those things, let them see the life of someone that lives differently. It's an example of what I just said. I just found this out from the Chinnanda Pran about a week ago. A devotee in San Diego who was the president, now he's a sannyasi and traveling. Mahatattva Prabhu was his name, now it's something Swami. He started a Krishna lounge, and I thought it was a separate facility. And Nityananda Pran corrected me, said, no, it's just a room within the temple. So some space within the temple. But it was very creative, and young people would come. I saw videos of what it was like, and they would do what young people do. Dress the way the young people dress, and, you know, they weren't allowed to eat and drink things that young people eat and drink, but, you know, their behavior was young people behavior. And then Mahatattva's explanation is, you know, I would go in my dhoti, shaved head, tilak, and, you know, I'm a brahmachari. And, you know, they were very comfortable with me. I didn't have to change my attire and dress like them. And, you know, it was like, as opposed to Krishna West, things that you got to dress like they dress and so on. They'll be accepting of you. But right in the temple. And then during that period of time, many young men became devotees. But, you know, after some time, the realization was it was hard for them to stick because they were still wet wood. So the incubation period is, longer incubation period is needed before, you know, they say they can, you know, he had some standards. They had to make some commitments of time and stuff. You know, he was Eastern European. He was like a little strict. In terms of, if you want to come over on this side of the bridge, this is what it is. And over on that side of the bridge, you can just be what you like. And, you know, chant and be happy. So, there's different approaches, but a principle is, you, when you're on that side of the bridge, you're not giving them, you're not hiding, but you're not, you know, hitting them with something that's just going to be unpalatable. You have to be that which is maybe unpalatable to their sensibility. And that's just fine. It's one of the, I learned this from one devotee that spends a lot of time in colleges. It's politically correct these days to express your views, but to impose your views on others, that's not politically correct. So, you know, my values are, and that's, you know, politically correct. There's not, they don't feel judged, it's just your values. Yet imposing your values on others. So what's needed is to bring, it's a shift of culture from spiritual conception, from a material conception to a spiritual conception, and a lot of it has to do with the social skills of the person, to be able to have people feel warm and identify with the person who has, you know, deep inside a whole other set of values, and even there's something below values, it's like fundamental assumptions of life. And people can access that if there's some sense of bonding with the person. That's how we give association to people that are unfit, like Prabhupada. Or visiting a devotee couple's home, and in this, you know, the stairway, there's different images of Prabhupada, and one of them is Prabhupada with Gopal Agarwal, and Gopal Agarwal saying, Prabhupada never spoke against anything that we were doing. He never told us, don't do this, don't do that. He never spoke like that. He just gave his association very liberally. And, you know, their Krishna consciousness went up. They didn't become sadhakas, but they made their Krishna consciousness went up. And, you know, and Sally saying some similar things. Swami, he was so nice. They had bad stuff in the refrigerator, just say, get rid of that bad stuff in your refrigerator. He didn't bring it up, even. He was the guest in their space. It's on that side of the bridge. And their consciousness went up to their capacity. And he never asked us to do anything or not do anything. And that's, you know, Swamiji, are we supposed to be following some restrictions? Yeah. I'll give them to you tomorrow. And that's with once the bond had been established. And we said, okay guys, let's go that way. They're ready to go that way because the bond was established. Yeah.
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 So, you know, making friends, and then, you know, there is a bond being established, and then the person, you know, you give the person Bhagavad Gita and they read about women.
Yeah.
So not only women, had a conversation with a man.
Of course.
Who minds, you know, these statements about
sure.
women.
Yeah.
Know, and tried my best to explain.
Sure.
But they cannot go beyond that and they're gone.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, so that's our founder Acharya. He's our founder Acharya. Now, if we wanted to, you know, go back to him and when he was president, say, can we modify the language over here? But that didn't happen. And so that's in Bhagavad Gita. He's our founder of China. We don't make any apologies for him. We could ask ourselves, or I would suggest for you to speak with Vishakha, Prabhupada disciple. You know, how do you, in the course of, how do you handle that one? It doesn't mean that they're going to come back if you have a better answer than you presently have, but at least in your own heart you can be clear. This is how someone who is very mature, you know, a woman in the midst of so many sannyasis that were, she's, you know, she's got cooties because she's in a woman's body. But, you know, there she was right in the middle of everything, and Jamuna right in the middle of everything. And so, Jamuna's not around to ask, but Vishakha is. And just for your own heart's sake, and we don't not give people Bhagavad Gita. We give them maybe signs of self-realization first, but when they come to that, some people are going to hit the road. Maybe even before giving them, anyway, you should consider how to handle different situations. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's almost 9:00. We're going to end with this. Mm-hmm.
I was having a conversation with someone recently, and the topic came up about creation, the origin of creation, things like that, and went on to, basically this person was presenting the idea that every, you know, we're all God, like this common, you know, modern idea. And so I was trying to explain, and, you know, like Achinta Bheda Bheda Tattva, oneness and difference and things like that. And then just in thinking about it, I was wondering about the Ishopanishad verse where it says that all emanations from Krishna are perfectly equipped as complete wholes. And what does that mean in regards to the jiva? What does it mean that the jiva is whole? Because someone could say, well, that means that they're completely the same as Krishna, that everyone is completely whole, that the whole is emanating other wholes.
Well, a very simple response to that particular question is the spark in the fire, the drop of water in the ocean, and is qualitatively same. It doesn't mean full independence, it means qualitatively the same. We're complete wholes, and we're being maintained by, you know, Nityo Nityanam Chaitanas Chaitananam Eko Bahunam Yovidada. So we're the body of us, you know, embodied beings, and the soul. We're connected eternally to the Supreme. We're complete wholes in the sense that we're qualitatively the same. It's the same as the verses that were referred to in yesterday's purport, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, etc. The living entity is qualitatively one. So as the complete whole is complete, the living entity is complete. But you know, like to say the universes are also emanating, and they're dependent. They're complete wholes, they're unto themselves complete, but they're dependent upon the maintainer of them. And the living entity is, we have, for example, we have desire, but we're not independent in our desire. We're independent to choose. We can't fulfill our desire in the spiritual or the material realm without the Supreme Lord. So complete doesn't mean independence, you know, absolute independence. It means we're qualitatively one with and dependent at the same time. Srila Prabhupada ki.